Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is my wonderful co-host, Mr. Spencer Tinfoil Hat Williams.
Hey, what's going on?
And he's wearing it today.
Also
with us is intern slash part-timer slash stenographer slash coffee bringer who brings no coffee slash I need to be a little nicer to wink, wink.
Wink, wink? Wink, whoa.
We have Amy with us today.
Wink, wink. I get a wink, wink.
That's literally what we say when we go to payroll and we say, we got to get Amy's paycheck. Wink, wink.
I didn't even know I got a paycheck.
Exactly. The wink, wink works.
No.
We got a great show in store as we are going to be talking about the 20th anniversary of one of M. Night Shyamalan's most famed films, and that is... I'm just kidding.
Oh my god! Not even acceptable.
That is the 2002 Alien smash hit film, Signs. So stick around as we talk about that and get into the nitty gritty of that movie. But before we do, Spencer, give them opening credits.
Tune in each and every Wednesday morning on all your favorite streaming platforms and over on our website at filmlosophers.com. Also, connect with us on the social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101.
That's right. You can check out all of our alleged 300 plus episodes over on our website. We're over 300, right, Spence?
Yeah, we definitely are.
Yeah, we are. Wink, wink.
No, wink, wink. We are.
That's a lot of winking.
We got over 300 episodes over on our website. Everything from action, anime, romance, everything you can think of, we got it. Check it out. Filmlosophers.com. Also, check us out on all the streaming platforms for podcasts, whether if it's Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, iHeart. We're on iHeart. If you want to check all those out, you can actually find us on a lot of podcast streaming platforms over at The Filmlosophers. Give us a follow. Give us a 5-star review. We are super excited to see all the people that are coming through from the recent event that we just did, which we just came from doing a trivia hosting event for The Boy Who Lived One, Harry Potter, over at There and Back Cafe and Games here in downtown Sacramento. Check us out over there. Also, check us out on socials. We'll give you the handles at the end of the show. We got a great show in store as we're talking about Signs, the movie, but we were having a conversation right before the show started, and it's interesting to me how a lot of times we get sucked into subscriptions nowadays that we don't even recognize that we still have until we get billed for it.
Recognize this. Okay, no, I need to address this.
So this one of the biggest culprits in terms of streaming or in terms of subscription services that nobody tends to realize and just people don't know how to approach it is Audible.
It's not terrible. It's brilliant.
Well, the fact that you're like, okay, $14 a month, I get a free credit, I can listen to books, but that's a lot of money now. Nowadays, $14 can go a long way, and you don't realize it until you're like Amy, who's got 8 credits.
Six. I have 6, and I just bought Scalzi's new book.
You're buying things right now just so you can get a tip?
I am so glad that you're focused on this episode.
I am
here.
Focused. I mean, look, here's my problem. I do like...
Among many. Go ahead.
I got a lot of issues, but they're comic issues, okay, my dude? But so I have a rather large Audible collection, and much to Spencer and my dismay, they keep giving you those credits. Yeah. And if you don't use them, they take your money too. But then, if you don't use them and you're like, oh, I want to cancel, they're going to take all those credits away, which means you have to buy books and figure out what you want. Mm-hmm. So I am terrible at, I used to be a big reader, and now I'm a listening reader. So I'm problematic in the situation of, I'm like, oh, I don't really like that narrator. I don't want to commit to that book.
Well, and so Audible has kind of turned up the heat a bit. I don't know if you guys know this.
Uh-oh.
They've actually, so first off, the rule has always been, you've always been able to return a book.
Yes. Yeah, as long as within a year.
So first, the first caveat is, you have a year. Mm-hmm. They've now introduced another rule, which they have enforced unbeknownst to anyone else, that you cannot return more than a couple of books in a single instance, or they will actually freeze your ability to return books for a undisclosed amount of time.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
So if you like did you return 6 books at once?
You probably wouldn't even be able to get to 6.
Okay, then I don't have that problem anyway. I mean, I return them onesie twosies, but I'm like, oh, I didn't really like that one.
Well, like if you happen to buy like a trilogy or something and you're like, all right, all the books are out, I'm going to listen to these ones. And you're like, you know what? I really just didn't like the first book. I'm probably going to not like the second or third one. So I'm going to just return those. You return those. And then Audible apparently has these people who are watching and monitoring your account. And they'll say, oh, no, sus, you know.
Sus.
Okay, wait. Nah. Have you ever talked to Audible customer service?
No.
I had to because something happened. I don't even remember what.
That's really
I don't know. Something happened. Like, I tried to return a book and the website was like, no. And so I was like, I had to call them and they're like, oh, I can help you with this. What book were you reading? But like, she was asking it as like,
she
what were you reading?
She couldn't see it.
Like, no, like, I don't know. Like, she's like, you know, why? Like, she was asking questions. Like, she was all friendly and stuff. Like,
like a customer service agent?
No, like, more like I had sat down on a bus and someone was bored and wanted to talk to me.
Ah.
Yeah. Because then she was talking about this book she was reading.
She's like, please don't hang up the phone. Please. I haven't spoken to someone in 3 days. Nobody calls Audible customers and rewards.
Yeah, I could tell that. So that's probably the other way they get you is that they make their customer service so like friendly for us introverts.
So deprived from human environments.
Yeah,
and
that
social.
We don't want to contact customer service anymore, and so now you're stuck with it.
I believe it.
I believe that.
Yeah.
I mean, I had the problem that I was talking about where I got the trilogy of something, and I had always like I had read them a while back, but it was Howl's Moving Castle is actually a series of 3 books. And so I love the first book. I love the last book. And I forgot that the middle book drags. And I was like, ah. But I had listened to it. And I was like, I don't think, is this like they're going to know that I listened to it all the way through? And they're going to be like, no, you cannot return it.
It's like,
it.
Ma'am, you've drinking the whole soda. Why are you bringing us back the bottle? I just want to return this.
It didn't taste good. But I didn't get any flack on it. So I think I'm okay. But in the course of this conversation, I have been able to whittle away 2 credits.
Oh,
I'm very
gosh.
Proud of myself.
It's good to know that your focus is
where
it needs to be.
I am engaged. I mean, I have one about like telepathy and then one about kaijus. It's going to be great.
See, here's the thing. When they were doing, I don't know if you remember when they were, and I'm pretty sure they're still doing it, where they would do those websites where you could create a card to manage like certain subscriptions. Like, oh, I mean, you've never heard of this.
I don't know what we're talking about.
Yeah, I know
about
what you're
so,
talking
so
about.
So they're like, it's like a website where you sign up, mm-hmm. you put your own bank card, your like bank information, and then you can create temporary bank cards.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I use this all the time.
Yeah, see, you know, I don't know what you're talking about. See, so like I was doing that for a little bit, and then like I stopped using it because I couldn't keep track of what was still on what. So I put everything, and maybe this is one of the few downfalls of Apple. Spencer. I started putting it all through my iTunes account, my iCloud account. Mm-hmm. And because of that, like every so often I'll get from in my Apple email. Oh, you paid so much so to this, or you just paid this much. And I'm like, what am I paying to? Like, no joke, the other day, and I kid you not, I had downloaded an app to do a trial.
Okay.
And I'm like, okay, cool. You know, I want to check this out. It was a graphic design type of app. I was checking it out. It was pretty cool. It's going to help me out for socials. I just wanted to try it out for a couple days.
Right.
There weren't any options in the free trial as to like, okay, once the free trial ends, then, you know, you start your subscription and blah, blah, blah. So there was no information at the beginning. So I check it out. I'm checking it out for 3 days. I like it, but I'm not going to keep it. So I go to the third day and I forget to delete the app. Mm-hmm. I forget to delete the subscription. I look at the end of the day at my emails and an email said, you paid $119 for this app for the year subscription.
No.
And I'm like, no, I didn't. And I'm like, in my mind, I I'm 19. I just got caught with a huge, massive phone bill. My parents are like, what the heck is this? And I'm like, I didn't download all these things, you know. And I'm like deleting. I'm like, it's not here anymore. Like, I can show Apple right there and then. And I'm going through and I'm like, I need to get rid of this. I don't want this. I don't want it. And I go through. And maybe this is on me for not reading through like a lot of the reviews, but a lot of other people are like, yeah, why am I getting charged for this? I did not want to pay for this much. Everybody else got the $119 charge after the 3 days. And so I'm like, I need to be smart. How would a smart person pursue this? And so I'm like, I know, I'll go to Apple. So I go through the Apple website, and lo and behold, Apple has this easy peasy, like, the way of like just submitting a claim for this. And there's not many different variations of how to ask for money back. So it's just like, request a refund. And then the reasons was, I don't like it. It's like, I don't like it. It didn't work, or something else. And I'm like, I didn't like it. So I hit that, and I get an email. It's like, your dispute will be processed in 48 hours. And I'm like, dang it, it's Friday. They probably don't work on the weekends. Lo and behold, I get an email Sunday morning, and they're like, your claim has been resolved. You will be refunded X amount of money. So I got the money back. But lesson learned, don't download apps that don't give you the immediate kind of hierarchy of what you're going to be paying. Because honestly, that app was not worth $119. And what it did was not worth that much money. So,
but they do put that in the little, when you click on those terms and conditions, they're like, you
agree to, yeah, because you're going to take the time to read the fine print when you're like, okay, miss, I got 8 credits and don't know how to stop.
Hey, I have 5 and it was great. Now I have books that I actually want to read and that I also like, oh, I've listened to this narrator before. It's going to be a good book versus me going into blindly, like not being able to listen to a sample. Or I had somebody that did the Red Rising series. It is Pierce Brown.
Pierce Brosnan.
I know. My brain went Pierce Brown, but then for some reason it saw.
I feel like Pierce Brosnan would make the most like horrible novel.
Mr. Prickle Pants.
It would be everything about like leathery oil men and like in places where people tan to look like leather. Like, I don't know. I look at Pierce Brosnan and I think that, I don't know.
Isn't he Dr. Fate?
Are we talking about DC?
No, because
that's
sorry.
Not a good that's, place to really kind of use a point of reference.
My brain went there.
He's from the Thomas Crown Affair. He was James Bond. He was several other things.
Yeah, I'm surprised James Bond didn't come up first.
It did, but then there's a tie-in that I don't want
to
go to.
We have to remember, Amy has not watched movies ever until like the last like 3-4 years. So
I'm working on it. Yeah. But I didn't even get to finish my statement because the narrator that did the Red Rising series was just a terrible narrator, and the books are so brilliant, and I'm glad that I read them and did not give Audible my credit on that regard.
Which, by the way, if you want to check out an interview with Pierce Brown, we actually did an episode where we talked with Pierce Brown at San Diego Comic-Con, so if you want to check out that episode, I'm pretty sure we'll give you that episode at the end of this episode. But speaking about going in blindly, this transitions us over into our main conversation because of the fact that Amy has never seen this movie, yep. And that is the discussion of 2002's M. Night Shyamalan alien film, Signs. This was a movie that at the turn of that century, if you will, coming off of The Sixth Sense, I don't think it was his sophomore film, but I believe like with
I thought it was a sophomore film. Yeah.
Oh, I don't. I'm just
to the interwebs we go. Keep talking. Yeah.
This movie was the follow up to everything else that he had done prior, with all the expectations and everything going on. This movie had a lot of things riding on it.
Oh, this is his third. So this is
okay.
Junior. Yeah, you're right.
Second.
No. Unbreakable.
No, she's saying
second.
What was the second one? Oh, okay, that makes
Unbreakable
sense.
Unbreakable was the second one, which I actually saw that one.
So,
I like that one.
Before we dive a little bit more into this film, Spencer, why don't you give us that official synopsis goodness?
Having lost his religious faith after the horrific car accident that claimed the life of his wife, the emotionally broken former Episcopal priest, sorry, link open for some reason. Graham Hess retreats to a remote farm surrounded by corn in Pennsylvania to live with his two young children and younger brother. 6 short months later, a sinister undercurrent of dread starts to take over the family when mysterious crop circle formations appear in the field, and the same circular patterns manifest all over the world. More and more, as equally unexplained happenings occur, grief and denial mix with paranoia, making a highly volatile combination in this elaborate hoax and ominous sign from above? Or could it be indeed the end of the world as we know it?
Written, directed, and co-produced by M. Night Shyamalan, the film stars Mel Gibson, Joaquin Phoenix, Rory Culkin, and Abigail Breslin. Couple key notes about the movie. M. Night Shyamalan actually cites The Birds from 1963, Night of the Living Dead from 1968, and Invasion of the Body Snatchers, the first one from 1956, as the influences for this film. In fact, he actually had the cast watch The Birds several times during production. Another key note about this, Graham Hess, the role played by Mel Gibson, had actually been written as an older character. Paul Newman was actually offered for the role, but turned it down, as did Clint Eastwood. And then one final little note about our wonderful composer that you heard just at the beginning of that one. Composer James Newton Howard was asked to purposefully reference classic film scores from similar genres, such as 1977's Close Encounters of the Third Kind and 1960's Psycho. The opening music and main three-note motif is strikingly similar, and possibly a strong reference to both the theme of Psycho and the theme of 1959's The Twilight Zone. So the piece that you heard there as we opened, James Newton Howard pulled a little bit from those as frames of reference. You look like you have a...
I have a question.
Yeah.
It's about this synopsis. So it says that he retreats to a farm. Is that not his farm?
I don't know.
I thought it had always been like his family's farm.
Yeah,
because, like, I don't know. These synopsis is always, like, throw me for a loop with their weirdness.
I just know the Episcopalian priest can get married.
There you go.
That's my fun fact.
So the reason why I say coming into something blindly is intern Amy has, for the last 20 years, never seen this movie up until this past weekend.
Yep. I'm proud of myself.
Why is that?
Because
honestly, I think the majority of your exposure, because we were talking about this last week when we talked about Nope, in reference to alien horror type movies that aren't just kind of based around sci-fi thrillers like Alien and Aliens or that franchise, or like Starship Troopers, movies that are actually based in a sense of dread and horror when it comes to aliens, your exposure to that was very minimal.
Mm-hmm.
So... What was the thought process for you coming into actually seeing a movie like this?
It was twofold. Because having issues with M. Night Shyamalan's earlier work.
Like what?
Well, so I've never seen The Sixth Sense, but everybody ruined it for me, so that's never gonna happen. Like ever. I can never see that. Like fully and
it's
not
true.
Feel like I know what's happening. The Village, I had seen part of it and I went, no thank you.
Wait, so why not with The Village?
So we recall that I am not the biggest fan of the horror genre in, like, I'm not going to say in perpetuity, but it's very difficult for me to find delight in dread because I have anxiety and it makes it a million times worse. And this man seems to enjoy anxiety and inducing anxiety in people.
Who's that?
Mr. M. Night Shyamalan is director. So I was very apprehensive to watch a movie where the foreboding dread is always just out of sight or just beyond a door or just... in ways that I wasn't comfortable for. So this was a brand new experience where I went, okay, we're going to see this. Okay. I hope nobody's dead.
Because it's interesting. Spencer, you've seen this movie before.
Yes.
Before this.
Yeah.
For the show
like
here.
This is one of the few movies that was also on in my house when I was a kid.
Same here. Like, I actually had the DVD. And I don't know if you had the same DVD I did. I didn't know if they had, like, different DVDs back then, like how they have Blu-rays. But, like, the DVD back then used to have, like, a ton of really cool things on it, like the short films that M. Night Shyamalan used to do as a kid.
Mm.
Like, he used to make alien movies as a child. And they show, like, when he had, like, a little high eight or something, like an older camera.
Or Super 8?
A high eight.
Is it called a high eight?
Why did Super 8s are the ones from the older days.
Oh.
High 8s are the ones, like, within the last, oh, my God, like, between 2000 and 2004. Like the DV cameras. And
he was just born in 1970, so I didn't know if he was still using a Super 8. I just asked questions.
I don't know. Or he was using a VHS camcorder. Who knows?
I don't know. That's the question.
Little Miss, I haven't seen anything in 20 years. The idea, though, that including those particular nuggets kind of added to the, if not credibility, the passion behind wanting to make an alien movie for me. Because, like, even as a kid, when I saw it back in 2002, I was like, this is cool. Like, seeing somebody who's done stuff like this and then seeing how it's, like, progressed to stuff like the movie itself, it kind of spurned things in me, like, to really want to know more about what he's going to do. Because at that point, like we said, it was his third movie, right after Unbreakable.
Which is a really good movie, but that still scared the pants off me, too.
Unbreakable?
Yeah.
Okay.
You can have that conversation later. It's okay.
Okay. Because M. Night Shyamalan is not somebody who delves in, like, the horror. He's not, like, a horror purist. His movies are not meant to just be that kind of one note. Like, The Sixth Sense had a lot of twists and tales. Like, there was a lot of almost detective work at the same time as while you were watching the movie. It almost kind of mirrored a little bit of things like Memento by Christopher Nolan. The aspect of, like, you were watching this, but what else is happening behind the scenes? What is it that you're not seeing? What is the, like, what's the, like, on a map, the key? What is the key to understanding every aspect of the movie? And even after you see it the first time, you're like, wait a second, let's rewind it back. Let's see these other parts, because then you start noticing. And I feel like it was around that point where, with the turn of the century, I see, and it's unique that we pitted this movie right after our review of Nope, because in all honesty, their career trajectory, or their way of creating movies in is similar in such a nature, because of the fact that he's done three movies. Jordan Peele's done three movies at this point. This is M. Night Shyamalan's third major feature film. And unfortunately, it kind of just peters down a little bit after that. Like, you have the movie of, you know, with The Village, with Bryce Dallas Howard, Joaquin Phoenix, Sigourney Weaver, William Hurt. You have, after that, you have Lady in the Water, which
I saw that.
Which wasn't widely well received in theaters, because just of its unique nature and whatnot. Then you had the wonderful happenstance of The Happening, which was extremely corny and ridiculous, and the trees are out to kill everybody.
I mean, they would if they could.
But they can't, right? Currently, unless they're ants.
And then we had the two major bombs right after that with The Last Airbender.
You mean that big blank line on his filmography that doesn't say anything? Yeah, I don't remember anything about that.
Nope, it is there.
Nope.
2010's The Last Airbender, one of Spencer's most talked about films. And then 2013's After Earth, which I am ashamed to say I went to the theaters to go see.
I thankfully did not see that one. So.
I also did not say that.
You didn't see both of you didn't see After Earth?
No.
It had Jaden
Smith. Yeah. Well, see, hindsight, yeah. Now you think of it and you're like,
I thought of that then.
I was with him. How? On that. I looked and went, Jaden Smith, no thank you.
The only things he had done at that point were he had did The Day After, or the Day the Earth Stood Still with Keanu Reeves.
He's in that movie?
Yeah.
Really?
He's the little boy in that one, and then he did the remake of The Karate Kid.
Which was okay, but I was still like, he wasn't enough to drive me to a movie theater.
See, like, the thing is with Jaden Smith is, like, and I was proven right, but, like, at
the
time...
Careful what you say, because the daddy will come and smack you.
Yeah.
Amy doesn't find that funny, but it's okay.
I mean, how long did it take for that man to get an apology out to you? Let's keep going. But, no. The thing that you found...
It seemed like at the time, just like Will Smith was trying to just make Jaden Smith like an actor at the time. And that's what the vibe I got from it. And that's why I was like, I don't feel like this is going to be good because of that. Especially since Will Smith was in that movie.
I concur.
Yeah. So that's the reason why I didn't see
it. So do you, either of you know the basis of that movie? Like the basic like structure of it?
The name of Will Smith's character is like Cypher Rage or something. It is Cypher like Rage. That. No. Something about like monsters.
I know somebody gets hurt. What? Somebody always gets hurt in a movie. There's an ouchie boo boo and somebody got mad.
Well, no. So essentially, the people of Earth have left Earth because Earth has pretty much gone into this period where it was no longer able to provide for its, you know, inhabitants. So they leave. They form this like colony in mid-space or whatever, and they've come up against an alien race where this race is essentially like rivals against Earthlings, and they can feed off and can see people by their fear. Like they can smell the fear on people. So what the warriors of Earth that's still there, what they have learned to do is to adapt a mindset of having no fear when they go into fight. And they essentially are undetectable by these aliens. So Cypher Rage, one Will Smith, is the most elite warrior out of the whole bunch because he has this innate ability to not exude any fear.
You mean because he's angry all the time?
Because he's stoic all the time. If you've ever wanted to hear Will Smith do his worst impersonation of like a South African accent,
oh no.
Or like it's this no. is it. And no. And then you get Jaden Smith, who is it's so essentially they go on this trip together. The ship crashes onto Earth, where Earth is filled with deadly creatures at this point who have learned to live on this planet, and they essentially everybody's dead except for Jaden Smith and Will Smith. Will Smith though has broken a leg and
he got a boo-boo
and he's bleeding out and he needs to get help or he will die. And so he sends his son to go and put a beacon at the top of this hill, which they have a topographical map, so that way they can be found. All in all, Jaden Smith has failed every class to be one of these types of soldiers, and he is expected to be like his father, and he is essentially in a dire moment after dire moment. He gets chased by like these freezer monkeys or whatever, and like they're like they look interesting, and he's got some of the most, because he's in midst of puberty, has some of the most like squeakish rants in the movie that will essentially make your ears bleed and make you feel bad that you paid to see this movie.
I didn't.
Ultimately, for some reason at the very end, Jaden Smith learns to channel his fear out and no longer has no fear, and he becomes as much of a warrior as his father and is able to get the beacon and saves his father. The basis of the story is actually based in Scientology.
Oh.
This is actually this movie is actually a Scientology based, like the philosophy of Scientology. Hubbard? Well, not so much Ron L. Hubbard, but like the idea.
Ron Hubbard? No, is it Ron L. Hubbard? I don't know.
It's Ron Hubbard. Ron L. Hubbard.
I don't know.
Because
Hubbard.
Huh?
I thought it was L. Ron.
L. Ron Hubbard.
Yeah.
Okay. Whatever. It's Hubbard.
We're not Scientologists. It's Hubbard.
Exactly. And apparently this movie is based on like some of the ideologies and philosophy in Scientology, which I don't know why M. Night Shyamalan made it. I don't know if he's a Scientologist, but this movie bombed at the box offices. No surprise there.
Yeah.
But we're not talking about the bombed movie at the box offices. We're talking about the good one, which is Signs.
No, we also forgot Split.
That's literally after. Yeah. So after Earth, M. Night Shyamalan doesn't do anything for a few years until he comes back with The Visit. Which was decent. It was interesting. It wasn't a return to form, but it was interesting. And then we get Split, which then leads us to Glass, which works in that whole trilogy of movies. Which Glass was good. It wasn't great. It was good. Glass was phenomenal with James McAvoy.
Split was was phenomenal.
Oh, Split. I'm sorry. Well, James McAvoy was still incredible in Glass as well.
It's James McAvoy.
Samuel L. Jackson actually spoke about it in an interview. He goes, he's worked with people who have done multiple personalities in certain movies, but he's never seen an incredible performance by anybody like the one that James McAvoy does. He goes, it actually feels like he is working with different people when he was on set with James McAvoy. So that's actually cool. That's really cool. Kudos to them.
But Signs.
So Signs, yeah. So obviously, we're going to be talking about spoilers. This isn't a spoiler alert. This is just a, if you haven't seen it, that's on you.
If you were me. If you were me.
And this is talking about the 20th anniversary of this movie. So not only are we going to talk about the film itself, but also its impact, if you will, and the kind of the trajectory of what M. Night Shyamalan did and where he's going, and hoping and praying that we're not seeing a similar trajectory for Jordan Peele.
Mm-hmm. Better not. I feel like that man's he's very clever.
I'm not saying this to be like, oh, it happened to him, it's going to happen. No, I'm not saying that it's going to. I'm just saying when M. Night Shyamalan came out the gate, he came out with The Sixth Sense. And The Sixth Sense was a phenomenal movie. It changed the name of the game for horror and for ghost stories. The same thing happened with Get Out. Get Out changed the name of the game for social commentary films and how they're perceived and the level of depth that it created in terms of understanding messages through film. Same thing with his second film and second film with... like I said, we're at the point where they both hit that third film with an alien movie. So, I kind of want to see where this goes and this conversation goes. So, before we continue any further, obviously, just for the sake of saying it, spoiler warning, blah, 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 20 years, your fault.
yada, yada, yada.
So, with those experiences of, like, different Shyamalan films... Spencer, do you remember the first time you saw this movie?
Gosh. No, not the first time. Like, I know I saw it like at my house. I don't think I saw it in theaters. Because it seems like that'd be a thing for my mom to...
drag you to?
Or veto?
Veto, yes.
But what about... So, okay, you saw it recently, obviously, to prepare for this.
Yeah, yeah.
What were your first thoughts as soon as you were done watching that movie? That this recent time around, like first impressions.
I really noticed everyone's style speaking a lot more than I did the first time. Like, I feel like M. Night was like, okay, everyone, I need you to all talk like you're on the mm-hmm. cusp mm-hmm. of whispering, but not really, but don't like get loud unless the scene calls for it, or I will hurt you. Like, that's what it felt like.
It's like, you know what my character does to his wife? I will end you.
Like, everyone had like a very like, you know, it seemed like constrained like way of speaking, unless like it was a scene that called for actual like, you know,
yeah,
emotion.
There's a monster under my bed. Can I have water?
It was outside my window.
Yeah. I'm not trying to copyright.
So I'll go next because I want Amy's first perspective last. But so I saw this film. I actually went to the theaters to see it. I saw it in theaters. My family became a huge fan of M. Night Shyamalan after that first movie. We saw the second one in theaters as well. Great movies. And then the third one came out. Of course, it became an instant family classic. Just like you were saying, the DVD was constantly... We had one of those like 4 or 5 disc DVD changers.
Oh yeah.
So nice. We had like a set of like 5 movies that were usually always in there. It was usually Signs, Independence Day, Twister. Ever After, Twister, and whatever that last one. The fifth one was like the rotating chair. But there was always those specific ones. And I remember seeing it all the time. But I remember the first time I saw that movie, I was like, man, people who have asthma are like literally on the cusp of death. Like, it was like, do I know anybody like that? Should I be careful when I'm around
yes.
them? Like, you shouldn't run. You have asthma. Do you know what that means? Okay. Do you know what that means?
Yeah, that kid had a very... Yes, we will come back and talk about this kid's asthma.
But
yes,
but
please.
In terms of the movie, like, it was unique. It was something that... It was my first introduction into the alien horror aspect of things. It actually didn't like fill me with a sense of like anticipation and thrill and like suspense. It held me in like a sense of fear of like, these things, they're literally on the news. People are reporting on these things all over the place. There are crop circles everywhere. Is this what's going to happen? Like, it actually created, I knew it was a movie, but it actually created a sense of like concern in my mind, you know, as a young kid at that time watching that movie. So I know now, like second time around, I was watching it. And yes, there are things that I did notice about the speech and things I noticed about like the performances that I'm like, do I really remember it like that? Okay. And watching some of those parts where it's like the religious implications behind it were a lot stronger than I had realized as a kid. But all in all, I still enjoyed it. I still really liked it, especially the second time around. But talking about the first time around, Miss Jane on scene over here, Miss Amy,
yep.
What was your first impression as soon as the film ended?
It sounds cliched, but thank God it was over. And I'll explain. I feel really bad in part because it took me 20 years and I'm like, man, if I'd seen this 20 years ago or even like 10 years ago, the impact, I believe, would have shifted and how I, like, the impression. And then also my second thought was, I just saw Nope. And all I'm comparing it to is Nope. Yeah. And I felt really dirty because I was like, yeah. Like, don't get me wrong, it's not bad. It's just, there's things that I've seen, and especially coming right off the tail of Nope, that I'm comparing it to wholeheartedly. So it feels kind of like I'm robbing Signs of the monumental impact it had at its time in watching it this late. But mind you, I saw...
And whose fault is that?
Well, I saw Invasion of the Body Snatchers, like the original one, and that one still was like fine, but this was just...
That's from like 70 years ago.
I know. Maybe I just needed to wait to 70 years. Like, if I could have avoided it for 70 years, it maybe...
You weren't even around when the first one came out.
Signs? I was.
For Invasion of the Body Snatchers?
No. I mean, I would look really good, though.
I mean, anyway. You would.
it could just be magic.
Or she's a ghost.
That could be an option.
That would make sense why we haven't gotten any coffee.
Anyway, so yeah, first impressions. Thank God it's over, and I'm comparing this to Nope, and I feel bad.
Okay, well, because the unique part about this movie is, at the time when you're looking at movies at that point in you know, 2002, movies weren't really doing horror type things like that. We had mentioned about which I believe we talked about at one point in time, one of the episodes, where horror movies had made like a hard transition due to the fact that Scream, the movie Scream, kind of upended, it might have been Scream, the 1996 whatever year that movie was.
Pardon me, I'm sorry.
That's right.
When that movie came out and kind of changed the name of the game for... Yeah, 96, that was right. Yeah. Changed the name of the game for horror movies, mm-hmm. because now at this point in time, you don't have to take horror movies so seriously. In fact, you can base an entire movie on the unique aspect of how ridiculous certain horror movies are. So much like that, you have the introduction of this movie and the unique aspect and writing style of M. Night Shyamalan. And the story itself, yes, is very basic. Like, it could literally have been inspired by a Saturday afternoon news report on, you know, what's going on around the world. But it doesn't take away... I feel like there's still a lot of depth to the story on its own. Now, mind you, I'm not going to condemn the movie for the actions of whatever one of the actors had done after the fact, or however he was. Mel Gibson lived his journey and he's doing whatever, and however he's come out of it or whatnot, that's not the case here, because he's not the creator of this, you know, of this film. M. Night Shyamalan is the creator. He's just a performer. He's essentially a puppet, a meat puppet, to put in certain perspectives. So being directed by M. Night Shyamalan, that's what his purpose was in that. So I can't, I don't want to, you know, deny this movie a true opportunity to look at it by holding it against the merits of or lack of one of its performers. So I just want to get that out of the way. Mm-hmm. But in terms of like this movie, the way this movie just progresses, the way it just opens up a lot of the twists and turns, and even some of the aspects of losing faith in anything, not so much God itself, but like just having faith in anything, even in the world, to losing it, to trying to find it, or even living without that kind of faith, being a more pragmatic person, a more, you know, logical thinker kind of thing. What?
Oh.
Ames is doing her own reading. I'm pretty sure she's on her fourth book purchase right now.
So. No, not my fourth book purchase. But so you kind of struck a chord with me when you were saying that horror for like that time in the early 2000s, it kind of shifted gears. And I was like, oh, what else came out in 2002 that was considered horror? It was like going and going. I was like, okay, some of these sounds really ridiculous. Bubba Hotep was on the list.
That was a comedic film with Bruce Campbell, who plays in, yeah.
Yeah, and then there was like Queen of the Damned. I was like, okay. And then when I was scrolling, it doesn't classify Signs as a horror movie. It classifies it as specifically science fiction. And I was like, okay, well, what came out as science fiction for 2002? And so you had like Men in Black 2, Equilibrium, Eight-Legged Freaks, The Minority Report. And I was like, oh, okay. And so I was kind of trying to balance that, where calling it just a science fiction film really doesn't do it justice, because it kind of branches in multiple directions in what it's trying to do. But there truly wasn't a big alien, even with Men in Black 2, which is, I still like Men in Black, but not the second one. I like the third one and the first one. Problems. Anyway, there wasn't a really big presence for this type of like bearing and dread in science fiction. But also there was Star Trek Nemesis that came out as well, Spencer.
Oh, we don't talk about that one.
Okay, see, and that's why I was questioning that. So, yeah, it was just, you kind of struck a chord with me in how this was a turning point for, I guess it's like a science fiction thriller. It's not really like full horror.
Go ahead, Spence.
No, I just feel like, yeah, this is one of those movies that, like, it's in so many places that it kind of feels weird to, like, slap on a whole bunch of labels of, like, it's a science fiction horror thriller. Dramedy.
Like, dramedy.
It's more drama than comedy in some places, until you're, like, if you're drinking something and you watch this, I think it would be funny.
Yeah, but, like, yeah, I just feel like it's, like, it's like kind of its own thing, where it's just like is in so many things that, like, you know, just that's probably why it just has science fiction slapped on it anyway. Yeah. Because like
it doesn't just plant its foot in one genre and go, here I am. Like I think Halloween Resurrection or Jason X came out at the same time. Like, oh, those are horror movies. Gotcha.
Yeah.
This is kind of like a little bit of here, a little bit of there, a little bit of everybody talking softly. Like,
I mean, looking at the overall like arc of what we've had offered to us in the early 2000s, because I remember seeing a lot of these movies. I mean, you had the rare occurrences of a really great, if not horror, a thriller type movie, or not thriller, but like a suspense based in science fiction or even fairy tale to some extent. Like you had in 2001, you had The Others, which you've never seen, but I'm pretty sure it's been ruined for you.
I just remember the commercial. That's actually all I remember of the trailer. So.
But also in 2002, you had 28 Days Later with Cillian Murphy, Brendan Gleeson, which was a great movie. Super low budget. It looked like it was super low budget. One of Cillian Murphy's earlier movies. But like I've stated before, the majority of movies at the time during that time frame earlier into the years, the most hit horror films were all foreign. They were international films.
Yeah, The Ring came out in 2002, didn't it? I think it did.
The
US release.
One? Yes, 2002 for US.
There you go.
So like, but you had things like you had The Devil's Backbone, which...
2002?
That was 2001.
Gosh. Oh, I'm not that old, am I? Oh, gosh, I am. Oh, my God.
You had one of Bong Joon-ho's first films, The Host, oh, yeah. which was a great, fun monster feature. You know, even 28 Days Later was filmed in the UK. You had Thirst, but that was 2009. You know, there was a lot of different films. Ringu was out, I believe, 1999, 2000. Juan, which was The Grudge, the original. What was it? I believe it was 2002, the original. You even had the original Shudder, which was a Korean film. No, it was 2004. It's Thai. Sorry, it was a Thai film. But even then, that was the majority of a lot of the bigger films that were coming out in terms of in horror, in terms of suspense, were international movies, and they were the ones that were completely changing the game because, needless to say, America couldn't think of anything else, so what'd they do? They made American remakes of Japanese movies or foreign movies.
Yeah, that's what we do when we're out of ideas. What are you doing over there? Can I copy your homework?
That looks great. Can I do... Yeah, can I copy your homework? Yeah. That is 100% the... It's not even can I. It's like, oh, I'm going to copy your homework. Don't complain.
But with an original story like this, in the midst of everything else going on, original stories were very few and far between. Literally, The Others is a whole year before you get to, you know, Signs. And it's very sporadic. Eight-Legged Freaks is a comedic movie. Bubba Hotep is a ridiculous movie. Essentially, Elvis is still alive, and he is in a nursing home. And, yeah, it's...
He's played by Bruce Campbell.
And he's played by Bruce Campbell. Yes.
There's also Blade 2 that came out at that time, but it's...
Yeah. Blade 2 was done by Guillermo del Toro, but it's still a Blade movie, and Wesley Snipes is just a very interesting... So, needless to say, like, I don't know, do you guys feel like after the amount of history that we've had with cinema in just the last decade, let's just take the last 20 years, since we're looking at 20th anniversary, in the last decade... In the last 2 decades.
Sorry. You said last decade, which would be 2010 to 2020. Well, technically 2012 to 2022.
Yes.
The last 2 decades would be 2000s to now.
Thank you.
Sorry. It was Google. Driving me nuts.
I appreciate it. In the last 2 decades, would you guys say that movies like, you know, movies like this, specifically Signs, carries itself an air of originality to it? Yeah. Like,
because like even just like rewatching this, I was thinking like, you know, like there wasn't like, at least for me, like I haven't seen as many movies as like, you know, you, Eddie, but like for me, I haven't seen anything like it before or quite like it since, because like just like, you know, like this movie that just starts off with like, you know, what's happening, and it turns out it's an alien invasion. Like, normally, like, I feel like with other alien invasion movies, like, it's real big and loud, and it's like, we're here, oh, and then you're following, like, military people as they fight the aliens.
But, yeah.
Like, that's not what this movie is about at all.
And it doesn't carry that whole, like, oh, you know, kind of like a War of the Worlds type of vibe. Like, oh, it's us versus them, so we gotta militarize ourselves, and, you know, we're seeing all the killing and all the destruction and everybody being, you know, completely vaporized by these creatures from another planet. It's more of like the human aspect of what we would do during a time like this, and incorporating something as unique as somebody who had just lost one of the most important people in their life and them kind of going through a life change, like a complete almost breakdown of who they were before, trying to find themselves now still. I find a lot of that unique and fascinating, because unless you've gone through it or unless you've studied it well enough, capturing loss and the process of grief, not so much grief itself, but the process of grief, is a very hard and honestly very easy to call out the BS on in movies. Because immediately when you have people who are trying to emulate like such unique emotions and processes like grief or like true love, or I mean, they literally have made genres out of those. Like rom-coms are literally based on the fact that people couldn't take certain people seriously in romantic movies, so they figured, okay, let's make it a romantic comedy. And vice versa, movies where you have characters who experience loss or are experiencing the process of grief, it's very seldom that you can see somebody who not only has to emulate the loss of faith, but also the loss of somebody they love. And take it for what you will, prior to all the garbage that came up about Mel Gibson, Mel Gibson was a devout Catholic prior to all this. Mm-hmm. He lived the life of a celebrity. He did a lot of things. And I'm pretty sure, like, at some point in time, like, his part of his self came through in this performance. Because, I mean, I got to be honest, like, Mel Gibson is a good actor. I liked Mel Gibson. I liked old Mel Gibson. I'd like some of his newer stuff. Not all of it, but some of his newer stuff. And in spite of him and who he is off screen, he tends to pull out like a really earnest performance. Like, I can't help but choke up every time I see him in things like The Patriot. If you guys have ever seen him in The Patriot, that man loses 3 children in that movie throughout the course of it. And you feel for him all the way up till you see him, like impale Lucius Malfoy or what's his name,
Jason Isaacs
in the movie, and you're like, yes, my sons were better men than you. I was like, yeah, because all those moments mean the more to you because he can emulate that. He embodies it. So I don't know, like, how do you guys feel about, you know, portraying, or movies that portray, or even this movie that portrays, like, the process of grief and how you think it depicted it?
It's good and interesting because it takes a different turn from what most people think. Like, if you've never truly experienced grief, you're gonna be like, oh, I know what it's supposed to look like. There's this blah 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 stages of grief, yada yada. And instead of understanding that, it's hard to portray if you haven't been there, and he does a good job in that. Going back to your other question before, where you were asking about original concepts,
yeah,
and this is actually tying into grief. Arrival came out in 2016,
mm-hmm.
And so in that journey, in and of itself, too, like it's for original concept, it was something I had never seen. I did see the movie, but for story-wise, and then also for grief, Amy Adams has a
Didn't
faith.
I tell you to watch that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought so.
You're welcome.
No, you're welcome. Tell me
you're welcome. I watched it.
Okay, that makes a little bit more sense.
But so, in relation to grief, yeah, in this, he's capable, and there are moments where it's balanced. Like, you see, For me, being just like a first time viewer, you see Joaquin Phoenix's character Meryl trying to be the balance in that house while he's trying to still support his brother, but he understands that his niece and his nephew need him all the more. And you're flexing back and forth between so many situations where, perfect example, that last dinner scene. I was telling Spencer before the podcast, I was like, I hate this. I'm so mad at this man. I hate that he was doing this. I hate that he's screaming at people. And then he's just sitting there eating. And I'm like, people are scared. Like, you don't need to be stoic. You can be all scared together. You don't need to eat everybody's French toast, man. Come on. But that is part of grief. That's understanding that there are going to be moments where the outbursts are natural. And when you... He's sitting in such a position of authority within his household, but also as the leader for his household, mm-hmm. simultaneously grappling with the loss of his wife, impending doom, protecting what's left of them, and like everything else. And he acts it and portrays it really well. But yeah, Spencer.
Yeah. Yeah, even though I've never been in the situation of losing my wife and then also losing my religion. Like, there's something
okay,
about
REM.
I know, it's like hey, REM.
I don't know, he makes it somehow relatable, which is like really interesting because you can feel it coming off of him like through most of the movie. Like once you like get a feel for like who his character is, like as the movie progresses, like you can get like a feel of like his actual pain, and like even like the little things like around just like the rooms and stuff, like how he hasn't touched his wife's room yet and it's still like there, and like how just like the cross is gone but like you can still see a silhouette of it, like there's like lots of little touches in the scenes, like from like just set decoration, and then there's also like touches from like how he portrays his own grief.
Yeah, yeah. And in terms of the story, the other side of this perspective, if you will, the majority of the time when you see aliens, it's usually in two very drastic sides of the spectrum. You either have this monstrous, you know, multi-legged, absolute insane-looking, either a xenomorph, a predator, something that looks like just by staring at it, you'll die. In terms of aliens, why are you looking at me all furrowed and everything?
Because that's not the aliens that I grew up with.
You didn't grow up with aliens because you didn't watch movies. Unless
Hello,
you get
Flight of the Navigator had aliens.
Well, I was gonna say, or you get the other side of the perspective, the other side of this spectrum, where you have usually like very basic looking body structures, either large bulbous heads, round oval shaped eyes. You have this entity that is more focused on the mental capacity of what they can do rather than their physical prowess, their physical ability to do whatever their job is to do or whatever they're here to do. You know, and you see it throughout different forms of history, the two sides of the extreme. Very rarely do we get an opportunity where, like in this movie, we get aliens who look to a certain extent of something on even level playing field as us. Mm. They look almost slightly human, but not in terms of their structure, their physical structure, but still has this menacing, otherworldly facial structure and whatnot. Like, it changes it, which it makes sense for the sake of this movie, because if it looked like anything like Predator, you know, Meryl would have never beaten him with a bat. We all know that. But then if it looked like something like E.T., like, it'd be a really horrible ending scene. Like, you know, after Graham cuts off his finger, he uses his finger as a nightlight or something, you know? So it's also interesting in that aspect where the movie's not focused on, you know, trying to hide that the threat is here. Mm-hmm. The threat is on the ground. It is in your backyard, quite literally. And I think that's a very unique move. Coming from the perspective of, if you look at like what Steven Spielberg did with Jaws, mm-hmm. you know, he gave glimpses of it throughout the film, but never the full span of it. Now, mind you, that was based on a, you know, technical issue rather than, you know, a directorial decision, because the dang shark never worked.
Bruce was just doing the best that he could with how he was built.
Yeah, but he was built like one of those just really big singing bass belly.
Billy the Bass. Because
I don't know if you heard, the singing first time they created Bruce, the way they structured his body, it's soaked with water so quickly that it just sunk to the bottom of the ocean.
And they're like, well, he's down there somewhere.
But I feel like that was also an interesting homage, if you will, to like what we've seen with Steven Spielberg and films of the past, who create that sense of, you know, baiting the audience member as the story goes with large chunks of promise up until we get to that final climactic moment.
Well, I was curious about what you guys thought about that, because I like watching the movie, like a lot of it is very like intentional, but I was like, is one of the reasons that they possibly hit it to like the very end, and even like the first shot you see is a reflection, because the CGI was not as great back then, because, like...
Well, the thing is, they didn't know it was not that great back then. You have to remember.
Yeah, that's true.
Back in 2002, they used to think that was it. That was where it needed to be. But I think more to that point, the reason why they waited to the end was not because the danger was the alien, but the danger was the alien killing the sun. Like, that was
killing the other Culkin.
Yes. what was his name?
Rory.
No. I mean, in the movie. I know he's Rory Culkin.
Morgan.
Like, it wasn't so much the fear and the dread in that moment was not that, oh, there's still one left. No, it was, there's one left. He's got a vendetta. And he has the sun in his hands. Now, mind you, I have no idea how he knew where he lived.
There's other questions that I have just in relation to it being that time. But I think that so I have to say, even though it had been prior spoiled for me by BuzzFeed, WatchMojo, there it is, where they were talking about the most intense moments in a thriller. And it was that first reveal when Joaquin's in the closet with the TV, and it's the first footage from San Paolo with the kids, and they're screaming and everything. When it came across the wind, it was the first, like, we see the alien. That was such a great scene, and not only how it was shot, how it was staged, Joaquin's response, but also the use of CGI there, where coupled with the, like, it's like, oh, this is what our cameras are capable of right now. It made sense. Like, it looked, you're like, okay, it looks realistic. And then when we got to the end, you're like, almost. We're doing good, guys. Keep going. I mean, the question does come down to it is, what part of that was practical? Like, why didn't we just go full practical?
Because it wouldn't have fit what they were, you know what? Who knows? You know,
we're not directors,
obviously. but it's one of those things where it's like you're people who see it and look at the alien are like, is this it? At the end of the movie, is this it? Is this what I are missing the forest for the trees? Because the dread of that moment was not the fact that there's an alien still left, but it's that his son had a massive asthma attack down in the basement.
That child should have been dead. Coming from an asthma person and a child and having a child with asthma, that child, oh, keep going, please.
But also knowing if he has another asthma attack, he could die. Yes. And then knowing that this situation happened, are you okay over there? Because you seem to be...
No, this was...
Okay, tell me what it is that upsets you about it. That way we can get this out already so you can stop making weird motions with your hands.
I'm just going to back me up on this because... asthma homies. I'm going to say asthma homies for life, and he's going to go, you said homies. So, first off,
Amy still considers herself ghetto.
I'm not ghetto. So. I've established that. I'm not cool enough.
What's up, my fellow brothers?
Hey, cool kids.
Let's get down with the sickness, yo.
Oh my gosh. So,
go ahead.
So, firstly, when he's having that asthma attack and he's in the basement, I was like, bad parenting. You need to at least have access. Also, I thought he had a inhaler in his pocket. But then he's sitting there, and he's doing nothing to encourage this child to actually open up his airways more to let him breathe, to help him breathe. He's just like, breathe with me. So I had problems with that. Okay. Then we get him upstairs. At this point, when he lays him on the couch and the child has suddenly passed out, we're like, okay, this child is
when
is not-
he? He's still... He's awake because he asks him, do you want to watch what they're talking about?
On the couch. And then when Creepy McCreepy Pants comes and picks him up and is like threatening him with not all of his fingers and his little pew-pew guns out his wrist, like the boy straight up looks like he's passed out.
Because he had another asthma attack.
Which means the child should be dead. Which means when he finally gets him away and drags him out into the yard, if he's got him over his lap and he's jabbed him with the EpiPen and he's sitting there rocking back and forth, you would think, hey, we probably want to put him on the ground and start doing some CPR and checking to see what's going on. And then his lungs were closed. He never went in. I was like, if his lungs were closed, he wasn't breathing. He's dead. He's been dead for the last 5 minutes. He's dead, Jim. He's dead. Spencer?
I mean, it doesn't look good for Rory. yeah, like if his asthma is that bad, like... That kid needs to have more presence of mind to always have his inhaler on him, even in alien attack. Like, As a kid, watching this scene, I grabbed my inhaler. I stopped the movie so I could grab it because I was like, uh-uh, I don't like this. But yeah, no. Like, asthma is a serious condition that affects millions of people.
Oh, my gosh. Is this your PSA?
But like,
so really quick, just so we can establish, because there's context to this conversation. Mm. The two people across from me at this table are both asthmatics.
Yes.
Both of them suck at breathing.
It's not my fault.
They were.
My body works. My parents ignored my asthma until I became an adult. And
they
I'm
are
like, there's
literally
something wrong.
They are literally allergic if they go outside to anything.
I actually am, and I resent that.
I'm sorry.
The weeds hate. Like, I'm allergic to every form of grass currently available, and only like 6 trees out of the list of 25 they scratch tested me on are like, hey, you're cool. Everything else hates me.
Oh.
I don't want to move to Texas where walnut and pecan trees are like prevalent everywhere, and it will not murder me.
I'm not moving to Texas.
I don't want to go.
No,
but the outside tries
but
to kill
really
me. That is
quick,
not my
to
fault.
To our Texas listeners, don't listen to them. They are just
too
angry asthmatics.
State.
They both have to go to AA every now and then for angry asthmatics.
For life, thank you.
Huh?
I said I'm a California boy for life. Thank you.
I appreciate Texas. It's just hot and sticky.
And mind you, yes, to probably a certain extent at this point in time, 20 years later, might I add, yes, that may be more prevalent and common knowledge. I'm sorry, when did you say you got your first inhaler? When did you first get diagnosed with asthma?
My parents ignored my
At what age did you get it?
Oh, like 17.
And what year was that?
I don't know. We got to do math.
So it was like what, 2004,
2003?
Oh,
2004. 2003, 2004. Yeah. 96.
He's
been living that asthmatic life.
All I'm saying is you have to kind of give a little grace for 20 years of progress now that you've had experience with the fact that you know you both cannot step outside your own bedroom doors without having an asthma attack.
I knew that back when the movie came out, but okay.
Well, and that was the other thing.
Yeah, but you were also like huffing and puffing probably. I mean, if people see you now and then people see you, I have a picture of you when you were younger.
Yes, you're very excited about my Boys to Men.
And from your Boys to Men picture.
It's a very nice picture.
I'm pretty sure that young, scrawny kid was Mr. Glass incarnate.
Oh, so I was on wrestling team. Glass couldn't do that.
Did you have to ask him what kind of laundry detergent they use so you wouldn't break out?
That's so nice.
We don't talk about that. That's mean.
No.
Okay,
so, and also, the other thing is like, I didn't have an inhaler until I was much later, but I was in swimming. I was in water polo.
What does that have to do with the...
Because the whole thing was when I started having, and I didn't know at the time because my parents thought I was like, oh, you're just tired. They'd make you put your hands on top of your head to open up your lungs, right? Yeah. And that was the way that they're like, oh, just, you'll be fine. You'll be fine. And I would catch my breath after like 30 minutes of doing that. But he didn't do that.
But you caught your breath is what you're saying.
But the little boy didn't. He's sitting there and Mel Gibson is like, breathe with me, breathe with me,
and yet,
breathe with me. And I'm
and
just
yet
like,
your parents didn't know anything about doing that for you, and yet this guy, who's probably around the same age as your parents in the movie.
I still would have put the little kid's hands on top of his head and kept saying the thing. And
now that you know.
No, I still would have told him to put his hands on top of his head. I'm just really frustrated at some of the parenting choices that Mel Gibson has made, and I'm not trying to discount that he is moving through stages of grief.
But
I am.
Yeah. I was say.
But I am. The pause was long enough.
Were there any other performances in the films that you guys actually really wanted to kind of speak on? I know this is actually Abigail Breslin's debut film.
Really?
Yeah, this is her first movie.
Aww.
So her efforts in like this entire movie kind of scream veteran actress in you know, the kids' foray of that. But
she did a good job.
Was there anything else, any other performance that you thought did well? Maybe Joaquin Phoenix or...
Yeah.
See, the problem for me with Joaquin Phoenix, I cannot look at Joaquin Phoenix... can I speak, madam?
No.
Lord above. I cannot look at Joaquin Phoenix and not have a chip on my shoulder because of watching Gladiator. Watching Gladiator was one of my first experiences with Joaquin Phoenix, and his whole role in that movie just made me despise him as a person. Outside of the character, like, I'm pretty sure, you know, he did such a good job that he made me despise him in real life.
Okay, so here's a question for you.
Yeah.
Like, there's a trolley coming down a track.
Oh, boy.
Joaquin Phoenix is on one side and $5 is on the other.
Five what?
$5. Like $5.
Okay.
Which one do you save?
The $5. He would save the $5.
I mean, that's $5. That's a cup of coffee. That's a cup of Starbucks coffee.
The hate runs deep for this man, I see.
I would, Joaquin Phoenix, he's gotten better. I mean, unfortunately, he did do Joker, and we talked about that in an episode. But right out the gates, like, I don't even know, like, when Gladiator first debuted.
2000.
So I had 2 years of seething with Joaquin Phoenix. And seeing him here, I'm like, how dare you? Don't make me get Russell Crowe. Yeah. Just coming out. Am I not merciful? Yeah, you can take that mercy and take it up as Scandinavian Olympian. But it took me a while, a couple times, to see this movie to actually kind of enjoy just Joaquin Phoenix as essentially a regular guy. Like a regular guy who's trying to be there for his big brother. And I think on the second time around is when I really noticed the nuances of his character role and the impact his, you know, him being the younger brother, his impact in that family was. Mm-hmm. Because it really did. It. I don't know if time has just changed my view of how I see him, but he does a really good job of being a really supportive and everyday Joe kind of brother, mm-hmm. you know? So I got to hand it to him. Like after the fact, like Joaquin Phoenix, if you're listening to this after 20 years, I forgive you.
Now is that for Signs? I mean, for Gladiator or for Joker?
Deep thoughts.
Again. Never mind. I give up.
See, I can get on the Joaquin Phoenix train because for me, I didn't have the earliest exposure that I had to him was voicing Kenai in Brother Bear, 2003. So I didn't see his face for many ages. And then the next one was that I actually saw him in was Walk the Line. So that was like my first like full face exposure to him. So that was like 2005, 2006-ish. And then after that, I think I saw Her.
So you saw all of his most recent movies.
I saw more recent stuff. And then I went back and saw Gladiator during the pandemic, which I was like, oh, I really like this. Oh, he's a terrible, terrible human. And I remember texting you, Eddie, and you're like, this is why I hate him so much. And I was just like, I was like, he did such a great job playing a terrible, terrible human. I always applaud actors that are able for me to be like, oh, I hate you. I hate you so much. Because it's easier to make people fall in love with your character than it is to make them actively hate you and despise you. And mind you, that is a very slippery slope, but I could see why he did it.
Yeah.
And so he was really a delight actually to watch in this. And then I was able to pick up, oh, and then I saw the Brothers Sisters.
Yeah, the Brothers Sisters.
Yeah, which was really, really fun.
Which is another recent one.
Yeah, it's a more recent one. But I've never seen the Joker. but yeah, so his performance in this was really interesting. And then the woman that was the sheriff,
Cherry Jones,
she was really interesting because she was so even keel about things and just like her presence. So going back to what Spencer's talked about at the beginning of the episode with everybody having the same kind of like speaking tone, she did, but she carried more intensity in the way she spoke, and it carried the sense of authority that was necessary, and it wasn't just like a one-off, she's the sheriff and it's a small town, yada yada yada.
Yeah.
And I really liked her. And so finally when we get to that flashback, we get all the way to the end to the flashback about him losing his wife, and she's giving him the rundown about this is what happened. This is what's going on.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
And she carried such a sense of authority, but also balanced it with a sense of understanding and loss, that it was very nuanced and in such a small part that I was like, dang, I actually like you. That's cool. Yeah.
No, it's true. And this isn't the first time they've actually worked together, her and M. Night Shyamalan, or even her and Joaquin Phoenix, because they actually both show up in this movie and in The Village, the one that you didn't finish. But it's interesting the way the flow of time works when it comes to the progression of movies and the progression of genres. And throughout time, throughout the last 20 years, we've seen a lot of different types of either alien movies. We've had things where it's like alien action movies. We had another Men in Black movie since then.
Prometheus came out. The Predators, another Predator movie.
No, we had like two Predator movies.
Well, Predators with an S, and then the other Predator that came out in what, like 2018?
It was
in
it was a couple years ago. The Predator. Mm-hmm. We've had a slew of different kinds of types of alien movies. Do you guys feel like this movie still holds up after 20 years?
Ooh, Spencer.
Keeping in mind, obviously, we're looking at story, things that can be interchangeable, like CG work and things like that. Even certain performances, maybe interchangeable. But do you think this movie still in its, you know, in its truest form could still hold up to today?
I really want to lean towards yes, but I feel like there probably need to be like slight modifications for modernization. Because I feel like the base storyline isn't like something that's been rehashed to death like in the last 20 years of like, sure, you know, you're dealing with a family, there's an alien invasion, and you're just like at their perspective, and there's no real like military presence or like, you know, big finale.
Mm-hmm.
Where like there's lots of ships shooting like whatever the humans have. Like, it's a lot more nuanced and like, you know, like thought out, like kind of like, you know, a game of chess between two people.
Yeah.
Where, mm-hmm, like, you know, the aliens are trying to make their moves to not cause us to do something extremely stupid from their perspective.
Yeah.
Mm. So I think this does still hold up for the most part. Yes.
Amy?
I can agree. Like, I do agree. For the most part, it does hold up. There are other things, and thinking more intensely about how the story was designed and how the location was picked and things that would have to be adapted, simply because in 20 years, a lot has changed.
Yeah.
But even if you took it to a remote location and it was still a small town, would the story in and of itself be able to hold up?
You mean, like, Nope?
Yeah.
I'm just saying, because that's essentially in like a small town outside of LA.
Yeah, and it holds up, and it's in comparison between the two. Like, even if you look at location, they're essentially farms, ranches, outside of big towns, or they have access to a town, and between the contrast of both the lack of vegetation in Nope, where it's just basically all flat. You should be able to see everything.
It's a ranch. Yeah.
Yeah. Versus the farm in Pennsylvania, where it's all dreaded corn. And I say dreaded corn because nothing ever good happens in a cornfield. It's kind of interesting
I think a lot of farmers would take offense to that, especially corn growers. But you do you.
I mean, when the movie's called Children of the Corn, they come out of the cornfield. It makes me a little...
Have you seen that movie?
Nope.
Okay, there we go. So in regards to like my thoughts on it, I feel like it still does. I feel like at the heart of it all, the idea behind this movie and the efforts of recognizing not only is somebody dealing with an upcoming invasion of an alien species, but is facing this imminent threat while also still processing the loss of someone. I feel such a unique perspective. We don't get a lot of opportunities where, during that time frame in the last 20 years, we don't get a lot of opportunities to see people dealing with real life situations in the midst of their imminent real life situation. And we've seen it in the progression of things in terms of better directors, people who have come about and have really shined a light on like the human perspective, the human journey, incorporated in movies. Because it's easy to be like, okay, in the midst of the movie, then he loses this. Or in the midst of the movie, this happens. Or this guy has been dealing with this. And so it turns into like almost like a comical look off into the sunset. You know, Charlene would have loved it here. But like in certain instances where it's not natural, it doesn't feel properly written. This movie, I feel like, does that. And I feel like that kind of writing, that kind of return to form for M. Night Shyamalan is something that I feel like could still put butts in seats today, personally. Which brings me to my roundtable question for tonight's episode. And what I wanted to see, since we were talking about Jordan Peele, with Jordan Peele is coming out of his Alien, with his Alien feature, and obviously M. Night Shyamalan's film 20 years ago, with all the ones that we've seen in between this decade, what director would you like to see helm an Alien movie outside of ones that have already done it? So James Cameron, Ridley Scott, you know, M. Night Shyamalan, Jordan Peele.
So well.
But there's a lot of other directors out there.
Do you know what? I'm going to give up one to the fresh face duo that is the Daniels.
Ooh.
That would be fun.
Yeah.
And simply because I do not have enough.
That was a cheap shot.
It was a cheap shot. She literally. It was a cheap shot. But here's the thing. I don't have enough, like, has Guillermo del Toro done an Alien-esque? I don't think Kronos counts because it's horror. No,
it's not. And Kronos is about vampires.
Well, he also does.
Well, and then you have
Pacific Rim.
Pacific Rim
is as close as we kind of get to his alien kaiju love story, which is great. But it doesn't feel like an alien movie, like in a extraterrestrial movie. There we go. So the Daniels, I don't know what to expect from them yet, which I kind of love not knowing. And I would go see something that they put out in the genre. Yes, it was a cheap shot.
It was.
And do you know what? I'm so proud of my cheap shot because much like last week, everyone was like, dang, that's good. You took the easy one.
She did.
Nailed it.
Spencer.
I'm going to go with Taika Waititi. Because I feel like that would be really fun.
I mean, technically, isn't Thor?
No, that doesn't count. I mean, like, aliens, like, come to Earth and, like, you know.
Okay.
Like, alien invasion movie. That's what I was thinking of when we said that. Because, yes, I would agree, Thor is technically all aliens.
But that's a great idea. Yeah. Like, now I'm like, oh, that would be fun. Because I wouldn't know what to. Another one, I wouldn't know what to expect that would be coming out of that house.
No idea what that movie would be about. But that'd be very interesting. Eddie?
Oh, good job, Spencer. I think we made him angry.
No, it's interesting that you say that. Yeah, I feel like if Taika did a proper alien movie, that would be interesting. I feel like there'd be a lot more comedic aspects to it, but still, nonetheless, it would be an incredible horror movie. I mean, an alien movie. Obviously, Amy kind of hit it on the head. My first choice would have been Guillermo del Toro. I would love to see him do a true to form. And knowing him, he would give homage to every single great alien classic, from Alien and Aliens to Close Encounters, to even things like
Body Snatchers.
Well, Invasions of the Body Snatchers, Attack of the 50-Foot Woman. You have all these different movies, including even one of my favorites that I've actually loved for a long time. And that is a movie called Invaders from Mars. It's a 1986 movie that I really liked. I, much like Spencer's ridiculous, dumb Santa Claus movie, I saw it on a Fox Saturday afternoon movie segment.
They have the best movies.
And I fell in love with it. And I'm like, I would literally watch the movie and then get upset when commercials came on and then watch it still. And I found it after the fact. I've never been able to buy it. But maybe I should look for it a little bit harder. But Guillermo del Toro is my first choice. My second choice, because I don't think we've seen it yet on the scale that he's capable of doing, is Peter Jackson. Peter Jackson has done other worlds, like with the world of Tolkien. We've seen him do King Kong. We've seen him even do Meet the Feebles. he's done horror with Dead Alive. But we haven't seen him do a proper alien movie. And I feel like that would be something that I would absolutely love seeing in terms of the scale and the ability to incorporate, even to like a certain extent, incorporate a sense of lore and create a sense of like storytelling with it. So going around the tables, going as we're wrapping this up, I want to go ahead and start with Amy in terms of does a film pass or fail, and how many monocles, you being the most freshest person who's seen it.
Fresh. So I'm going to say this movie does pass for me, in the sense that it does have a story that is consistent and concise. You can follow through with it. It's well acted. And that part passes. Okay. Sorry. When it comes to monocles, again, I kind of am basing this on watchability and then desire for watchability for most of the for this one in particular. So it's not going to get very many monocles for me, but don't make it as a deterrent, simply because it has been trying for 20 years to get into my repertoire. And while the story itself is original, and it is, I can see shots and designs of how this was organized, it might just not be the favoritest one, especially coming off of, again, Jordan Peele's Nope.
See,
I'm spoiled.
The funny thing is that spoiled. Like her review of that right there feels very like Gen Z to me. Like, oh my God, like there's no movie like, you know, whatever done in that year. You know, all those old movies like Jurassic Park or, you know, Toy Story, those aren't anything compared to, like, that's kind of how you're coming off right now.
So if someone said that Toy Story isn't anything compared to, like, what is it, Paws of Fury?
Yes.
this is what I'm running up against, okay? Yeah. The fact of the matter is, this is taking me 20 years to see this movie, number one. Number two, I have put this back to back with another alien centered movie, which means all of my attention, I didn't have enough of a break to be able to sit down and go, do you know what? I really liked and appreciated this.
You had a week. You had almost 2 weeks. You had almost 2 weeks.
A week.
Yeah.
Sir.
A week.
No. Not enough time.
Right.
Fine. I'll give it a 3.5 out of 5. Spencer.
Okay, so this movie passes for me, but I do understand where Amy's coming from on this one.
Eddie doesn't.
Nope. Like, this is a movie that, like, you're going to feel a very different way about it if you saw it around the time it came out versus if you saw it now. Mostly, I think, because, like, a lot of movies built off of what this man made with this one movie.
True.
And so, like, you're seeing, like, now extensions of this movie, and when you go back to the original, it's not that extensive because, like, everyone built off it. So, like, I can get, like, why, like, get where you're coming
from. But it's, like, in that mindset, it's like saying, like, oh, the best thing is, like, the Xbox One. You don't know what you're talking about. You
Xbox
can take
Arcade. High five.
What?
I made a really dumb reference. Keep going.
It's like someone saying, oh, the Xbox One's the best thing ever. Like, why would you ever want to get a regular Nintendo? But it's like, we all here know how much fun the regular Nintendo is and was and still will be, for the fact of it's like its consistency throughout our community. That's kind of how you're shaping that kind of frame of thought.
The problem is that I have been avoiding most of this genre for most of my life when it comes to extraterrestrial movies that are not big, scary, and or foreboding. Which means that now we're going back to essentially one of the grandfathers of modern
in this generation.
In this generation, yeah, where things have been built off it and not having the exposure. If I had seen this before I had seen any more recent stuff, we'd have a different thing.
It's either funny because
every time we talk
about movies that we've seen that are from the past, there's always a caveat. Like, oh, if they hadn't told me that, you know, Bloodsport wasn't based on a real life person, I probably would have seen this movie whole differently.
Oh, no, I wouldn't have.
You said those are your words.
Kumite.
Spencer, I'm sorry, continue.
Yeah, so I understand. But yeah, for me, like, I like this movie. Like, I feel like it still does a pretty good job of holding up, even after all this time. So for me, I'm gonna give it 4 out of 5.
There you go. Eddie. The movie passes for me. I definitely can appreciate M. Night Shyamalan's, you know, mode of thinking and the aspect of where he's creating the perspective for the audience to see from. I can appreciate someone actually taking it from it being about the battle perspective of it, where it's us versus them, to it being more focused on what if a real family was dealing with this while dealing with losing something, somebody else that's really important to them, and creating that humanistic side of things. It allows us to see the more unspoken part about, like, most of these movies that we don't really talk about, which nowadays they do. They do incorporate that perspective of things. They do incorporate, you know, the perspective of the human element, as opposed to it just being all about, you know, oh, how angry or how ugly or how mean or how massive can the monster be, can the foe be. So I can appreciate that, you know, without a doubt. And on top of that, in terms of monocles, I do give it a 4 out of 5 as well. Like, obviously there are certain elements that didn't translate well over the course of time, that being technology, you know, with the lack of technology back then, as well as other parts of, you know, certain styles of speaking. I didn't get a chance to mention, but, like, there was a lot of intentional, almost novel-type writing that was used in the script that I was like, okay, nobody really talked like that, but okay, you know, hey, old people. So, but all in all, I enjoyed the film, and I think other people will too.
If you haven't seen it in this last 20 years.
If you haven't seen it, exactly. If you're one of those types of people.
If you're me.
That about wraps up another awesome episode of The Filmlosophers. We want to give a huge thanks to all the people out there who came out, like I said earlier in the episode, who came through for our trivia event over at There and Back Cafe and Games.
You guys rock!
Thank you so much for showing up. If you followed us on the Apple or on the iTunes podcast app, we're going to be going through those, and we're going to be doing a giveaway with those names as well as several others. We do have another giveaway planned. We'll be announcing that next week as well. And then, of course, if you want to listen to us more, you can hear us on all the podcast streaming apps, Google Play, Libsyn, iTunes, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, iHeart. You can check us out anywhere where those podcasts are streaming. Give us a follow. Let us know what you think. Also, you can check us out on our social pages at Facebook at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101. There you can check out all the great things we have. We actually announced our recent winner for the Batman VHS box set. She's super excited, and she's going to be getting her package in the mail soon. So
Alyssa_Gale_3!
Congratulations to you.
Yeah. And
Like we said, we got a lot of great more stuff coming up this last quarter of the year. We are excited as fall is coming into play. But most importantly, Halloween is almost here. So
Halloween ends or dies or...
Halloween. Well, I meant the actual season of Halloween.
Oh,
but
I thought you were just talking about the spookities.
Either way. Amy, where can people find you on with your Jane on Scenes?
The only place that it's ever lived, which is at Jane Unseen on Instagram. Other than that, please don't follow me around.
Oh my gosh.
I'm being honest. I'm awkward enough.
It is true, if you've heard her on the show.
Yep.
But this was a great conversation. And of course, we want to give a shout out to M. Night Shyamalan for everything he's done and everything what he hopefully will do in the future. No more Avatar, my friend. That's all
no,
we can say.
No.
So, from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
I'm intern Amy.
Class dismissed.